What you can and can't do in parenting. Parents think they can do everything with their kids, especially before they've had kids for very long. That is, you hold your newborn baby in your arms and you rock it gently and you think, ah, I'm going to raise this child to be just everything a human being should be. She's going to be happy and calm because I'm going to love her so much that she will just be almost a perfect human being, unlike all the other human beings I've ever met or known. This one is just going to be just perfect. It's a common parental thought, even if we don't say it out loud. You know, we sort of have the idea that if we just do it all right, you know, if we say the right things, if we do the right things, if we just live it the right way, our child will be spared the human struggles that everybody else has to encounter. We think that, oh, the reason we've been unhappy or miserable in our lives is because our parents didn't know how to parent so well. But now that we're taking parenting courses and all kinds of reading books and online help and everything, there's no reason for us to mess it up, so we're pretty sure that it's going to go well for us. Well, we're going to look at some of these assumptions more closely today and see what we can do about modifying our grandiose aspirations to bring them more in line with reality. Now, you might want to ask why. Why ruin our little delusion here? Why burst our little bubble? Because when things don't go so perfectly, you want to be able to handle them well. And if you are preoccupied with undue feelings of guilt and remorse and feelings of failure, you know, that sounds something like, it's my fault, I'm the worst parent, my child has this issue because of me, you know, and that suffering is not only horrible for you as a parent and a person, but it also actually gets in the way of your handling situations the way they need to be handled. You're really self-absorbed there and unable to step back enough to realize that you're supposed to be your child's life coach. Okay? You're there to give information and guidance. We're also going to look at what you can do today, not just what you can't do. But we're going to start a little bit with the can't do list, and then we'll end up with the happy side of what you can do. So number one, you cannot ensure that your kids will be happy. Now this one is a great disappointment because we do want our children to be happy. Many people have children who are miserable, and they may be miserable for a variety of reasons. They can have mood disorders which show up from the very first days of life. They're just cranky and crabby and crying nonstop, inconsolable, colicky types that never outgrow the colic and stay hypersensitive, just moody, miserable. Everything is wrong for these kids. It never tastes good enough. It never looks good enough. It never is good enough. They have a sour eye on everything. And that's not because of parenting. That's because of their genes. These children often become teenagers with more serious mood issues that now become not just, we don't call them crabby anymore, we call them dysthymic, perhaps, or depressed. Now, dysthymia is a condition of low-grade unhappiness. It's not a serious thing like a major depression. In that sense, it's not a crisis, let's put it that way. But it is serious in the sense that the person is just never satisfied, always slightly unhappy about everything that goes on. It's never right, never good enough. It doesn't make him feel good. Dysthymia has to last most days for at least 2 years before it will be diagnosed, actually, as a condition. And children aren't usually diagnosed with it, okay? Because in children, depressed mood is shown as irritability and sometimes anger and miserableness rather than the kind of thing we see in adults, which is more like a sadness or a low mood. And really, even in adults, dysthymia usually goes undiagnosed because the person thinks it's just life, you know, it's just the way it is. Things, you know, there's never enough money, there's always too much stress, there's a lot of pressures, and They just think that their miserableness is because life is hard, whereas there are people who are living the same kind of hard life, but they're always in a great mood because they've had the gift of genes. They've had the gift of those sunny side up, happy, perky genes, which, you know, that's a real gift for somebody to have. But, you know, and then there's people who are somewhere in the middle with, sometimes they're pretty happy and sometimes they're kind of low depending on the stresses that are affecting them. Well, this goes to your role as a parent. You know, what you did is you passed on some genes. Now, you know, that your job as a parent is to do the best you can with your conscious intentions and behaviors, your actions. So there's plenty you can do to make your child unhappy. Although, if your child has those resilient genes, you'll have to work harder to make him unhappy than if he has more vulnerable genes that are already primed to react poorly to stress. So, but if you act badly enough as a parent, right, if you abuse your child, you hurt him physically, you hurt him emotionally, you have a lot of screaming and yelling and stress and tension going on in your house, in your marriage, in your life, it will affect the child. So there are things you can do to bring a child down, okay? And how quickly or how far down depends on the child's genes. But there's only so much you can do to bring a child up because the fallback position is the genetic setting of those genes. That's the sort of set point that the child comes with. Now, we've sort of talked about the depression sort of scale, if you want to look at it that way, of up or down. But there are other things that interfere with the kid's happiness besides mood itself. And that there are other emotional issues, for example, like anxiety. So you want your child to be happy, but the kid is a nervous wreck, right? Always worrying about things, feeling a lot of pressure, maybe being a perfectionist, anxious about people dying, you dying, anxious about them dying, you know, just scared of the world, scared of life. And because of all that fear, the child is never really happy. It's just too worried and too stressed and too fearful to be happy. So that's another way the child can be happy outside of your control. It's not that you're scaring the child. Again, it's those genes. Children can have sad genes and they can have scared genes. And often they grow up to be people who manifest those traits in adulthood as well. It's not just a temporary thing. It's their inheritance that they have to work with. Well, from a spiritual perspective, the genes that a person's born with are part of their mission in life, something that they have to deal with and bring themselves. They have to work on themselves to get to their happiest potential, right, to really bring themselves up. But you as a parent can kind of be making it hard for them, right, by what you do, or you can give them the best start on their journey possible. And really, that is your task. We have kids who are also born with angry genes. They have a bad temper and they may be explosive. And, you know, that's not happy for them or for you as a parent, as you full know. If you have a child like this, you know, a child who tantrums, who gets furious, who's always blowing up, you know, that kid isn't pleasant to live with, but that child is not experiencing himself as pleasant either. Like, he's just unhappy, miserable, because he's mad. And again, that depends on his genes. There are some kids who are placid and everything rolls off their back and it's la-di-da-di-da for them no matter what, sometimes too la-di-da. But, you know, then there's these kids where everything bothers them. You look at them sideways and they're just furious, or, you know, they don't get what they want and they want it now and they want it their way. And if they don't, it doesn't happen their way. They get all of them, you know, knocked out of joint and they're just horrible to deal with. And that tendency to need things my way now is actually an inborn tendency. So, you know, this perplexes parents because sometimes parents are going like, oh gosh, like I try to do everything for this child. Like I buy him all the foods he likes and I take him to the places he wants to go and I speak so nicely to him and I'm so patient with him and he is nothing but furious and miserable and hard to deal with. You know, what am I doing wrong? Well, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. You're doing the best that you can, but the child's happy mood is not in your control. So that's the first one. And then, you know, another thing that's not in our control is our child's mental health altogether. So we are looking at these inborn tendencies towards anger or fear or sadness, but there are actually specialty emotions within this that come out as diagnosable mental health disorders, such as what they call ADD and ADHD, the attention deficit disorders. They call that a mental health diagnosis, which is the child's, you know, having trouble with concentration and impulse control and a lot of things that go with it, like social skills, disabilities, and immaturity, sometimes a self-centeredness, often the anger problems that are associated with various kinds of the impulse control issues. It's not just attention problems. It can be poor social judgment, poor executive function, you know, and so you want your child to be with it and to be on top of things and to be grasping things, and here he's got this condition. Or he may have obsessive compulsive disorder, which is something that affects young children, and especially it shows up in the teenage years, where the child develops rituals and beliefs and obsessions and compulsions that he is tormented by and torments everybody else by with in the house, because he may be just impossible to live with. Or the child falls into not dysthymia, but major depressive disorder. Again, in the adolescent years, this can show up where the child just cannot get out of bed, cannot go to school, cannot interact with the world, or a psychotic illness where the child has delusions and requires hospitalization. So these things are not because of what the parents said or did. The stresses that occur in family life are sufficient to trigger a genetically inherited mental illness. So we've only mentioned a couple of them. I mean, there's so many, but there's bipolar disorder as well, and personality disorders are thought to be inherited as well. So there's all kinds of tendencies that you may be carrying way back in your family tree's genes, and your spouse is carrying in their family tree's genes, and people, there's no family tree that does not have the genes for some kind of problems, right? Mental problems and physical problems. So it's just a matter of what does God want for the child's journey, and what can you do to help the child begin those steps of negotiating their journey. You're just starting him on his way. But you cannot make a child stay mentally healthy, nor can you ensure that your child will be physically healthy. That's another one that's out of your control. Doesn't matter if you feed them all the right foods and you know, make them do all the right exercises and you're on top of the vitamins and you're just like really into it. A child can be physically ill if they have the vulnerability for whatever disorders and diseases that they have. So that's not in your control. Another one is success in school. I mean, you want your child to do well in school, so you give him a tutor, you give him, you know, all the advantages, you take him to the library, you do his homework with him, you do all these things, but he either has it or he doesn't. And that's not in your control. You cannot guarantee that your child will have a large circle of friends to be a socialite. Even if you do, even if you've modeled it, even if you just have tons of people over to the house all the time, your child may be an introvert by nature, as somebody who just doesn't do well in large social scenes and does better with one or two friends, if that, and really actually enjoys their own company more than anything else, and maybe has a social phobia, that is a fear of being with people, or just it likes to do things that require isolation, just the person is into all kinds of hobbies and interests that don't require other people. So that depends on the child's nature, not on your nurture. And, you know, you can't ensure that the kids will get along with their siblings, that you will have a happy little family at home of people who love each other. You can do your best to foster cooperation, but you cannot ensure that any two kids of yours will get along well. So if you have, you know, six kids or whatever, you can't ensure that each will get along with the one under them or over them, or that they'll get along with the whole group or anything like that. There may be a lot of difficulty in sibling relationships, no matter how gifted a parent you are. You can't actually make your children accept your entire value system, belief system, thought system, swallow it whole, because they are their own people. And they have to form their own opinions and use their own free will to negotiate their journey. So they will learn a lot from you, but they won't be exactly you. So they may enjoy things that you don't enjoy, or have interests that you don't have, or not have the interests that you do have, or not want to do what you do, not want to spend their time the way you spend your time. And you see this more and more as they grow up, that they're just not you. You cannot ensure that your children will have confidence, be confident people with high self-esteem. For the reasons that we just looked at earlier, this is out of your control. Insecurity is a genetic issue. It's something the child deals with because she is insecure by nature. Okay? Now, you can worsen the problem, or you can bring the child to her potential by, you know, using good parenting techniques. For example, you could take a child who's fairly resilient and tell them that they're dumb and stupid and useless, and they'll know that there's something wrong with you. Right? They'll know that you have a verbal abuse problem and an anger problem, or you don't see things right, because they know that they're not dumb or stupid or useless, and they know it's you who has the problem. But then you take another child who was not born with those resilient genes, and they will believe you. And they'll just say, well, you think I am, and therefore I am. And they're kind of halfway there before you started, right? They're just not sure, because they don't have that own sense of inner trust, of self-security, to know what they feel and how they feel. So when you say something to them, that group may swallow it whole, and you can definitely worsen their problem. You can destroy whatever little self-esteem they had, or whatever little confidence they had, you can finish it off, right, through poor parenting techniques. In fact, I would say that it's easy to harm your child. It's just impossible to bring your child to the exact state that you want your child to be in. I'll put it like that. Doesn't seem fair, does it? But okay. You can't ensure that your child will grow up in peace and prosperity, or always be safe. You know, you're not running the world. It's hard enough to run your house. You can't even ensure that your spouse will be the kind of parent that you want your child to have. You can't save your child from mistreatment or from harmful experiences, because you can't follow that child around and put him in a bubble and protect him from all the dogs, cats, and mean children that there are out there. You just have to let the kid go and have his and her own experiences. So part of that will be all the other people in the child's world, those teachers. You cannot ensure that every adult your child comes in contact with will be loving, fair, and reasonable. In fact, your child may be exposed to nasty, mean, sick-in-the-head people, some of whom may be their very own relatives, and you just can't save your child from that. I would say that, you know, a good summary for all of this is that you cannot save your child from pain. And that's a really hard one for us to swallow, because what do we want most for our children, other than they should not have pain? They shouldn't have the pain that we had, for example, if we were fat as a child and kids picked on us, and we see our kids getting a little chubby there, you know, we can get so alarmed. No, no, I never wanted this for you. I wanted you to be free of the pain that I suffered. I always wanted you to be happy, not like me. You know, I've been through a journey of so much pain. Well, the news is that pain is part of life. In fact, we need pain in order to develop our deepest potential. We have to have two sides of life, the joyous side and the painful side, and there is no escaping that for anyone. So your child will have unpleasant, unfortunate experiences, because those experiences are part of the child's journey to help your child become a full, complete, deep, compassionate, wise human being. Now, if we were designing the world, we wouldn't have put it that way. So, you know, if you and I were designing the world, we would have made it a pain-free zone. But apparently, God has other ideas about what is good for us. So what we have here is a zone that has very beautiful, pleasant, amazing experiences, and also very painful experiences as part of every human person's life. So what can we do? I mean, I've just gone through this whole long list of what we can't do. Is there anything we can do for our children to help them along? What are we supposed to do? Well, I mentioned before that you are there to be your child's coach. You're there to support your child on his or her journey, which means you can listen to them compassionately. You can advise them with the whatever wisdom and experiences you have. You can teach them things. Whether they get it is not in your control, but you can certainly teach them everything about life, about their history, about their identity, about their community, about their world, about things they need to know and things they need to do and how to keep themselves safe. You can give them all the information that you have. What they do with it is in their department, but you can offer it. You can also teach them skills, how to cook and how to clean and how to shop and how to sew and all kinds of life skills, how to communicate, how to listen, how to be sociable, like how to have social skills. And you can model all of that. You can show them. Again, each child will take what they can from your lessons, right? You may be a very super organized person, prompt, on time, everything in its place, and you had one of those ADD children we were talking about before who has a cluster of symptoms, one of which is disorganization, right? And the child cannot remember anything, he loses things all the time, his papers are in a mess and they're scattered and they're half of them are at school and half of them are at home and that whole thing. You can teach the child your systems, but you cannot ensure that the child will become an organized person like you. That part is out of your control. You can give your children a spiritual discipline. You can teach them all about your religion and its rituals and just, you know, the way a person should be, its values. But you cannot ensure that they will fulfill it the way you teach it, right? They may have to discover a lot of it for themselves or work on it for their own spiritual growth. You can treat your children with respect, even though you're stressed. You can react gently and patiently to them, even when you don't like what's going on. That is in your control. In fact, anything that comes out of your mouth, right, the things you say and the actions you take, that is in your control. The results are in the other person's department, right? The results of what you're doing comes is not in your control. That depends on many other factors, including your child's free will and his inborn inheritance. But there's more than that, because keep in mind, you're only a small part of the child's development. I mean, there's the child's birth order and his place in the family. There's the child's school experiences and every experience the child has outside of your home with all the different people that he encounters. There's the culture at large that he's exposed to and the teachings of that culture. There's his own genetic inheritance, which they say accounts for about 50% of personality, so, you know, or more, right? There's his social circle, his friends, his peer group impacting on him. His own free will, and then there's what you're doing, you know, and I'm saying even what you're doing, there's no for sure how it's going to turn out. I'm just saying you can do certain things. For example, you can show affection with words and with actions. You can be a good listener. You can set appropriate boundaries and institute various kinds of discipline. You can make yourself the most knowledgeable and rich parent in a way that you can by studying and learning, attending parenting groups and listening to iPods and what, all kinds of things, right? Podcasts. And you can do all kinds of things to enlarge your options as a parent. And you can provide for all your kids' physical needs or their educational and leisure and medical benefits, everything. You can offer them so much. You can present yourself as an excellent model to them, a model of a good communicator, a model of a good spouse, a model of a person who manages her stress and her anxiety and her anger and everything. You can present that model. You can work on your marriage and show your children how to live a married life. You can consult professionals or your rabbis or your teachers or whoever for family guidance, for you can go to experts who are there to help you. And you can just continue to grow and improve and get better and better, you know, modeling even the growth process. And of course, most of all, you can pray for your children's well-being. So there's many things you can do, but just understanding that the results are not in your hands. And when your child fails a subject at school, that's not because you're a failure as a parent. Or when the principal calls to say that your child's being suspended, that's not because you're a failure as a parent, right? Or there's just so many factors that go into why that is happening. When your child is disorganized or late, or bad-tempered or whatever it is, this is not about you. It's about your child. So you want to see yourself as doing a good job of parenting, as being a good parent to the extent that you are able to use appropriate parenting techniques, that you're able to keep your calm, ask for help when you need it, choose interventions that seem reasonable, and that sort of thing. Now, if you find that that's hard, right, then you can say, well, yes, I'm not doing so well in my parenting because I can't keep my calm, right? I know that I'm making everything worse because I scream at my kids all day and all night, right? So if you want to take ownership of something, you can take ownership of that. Because even if you come from a bad model, that is, your parents screamed at you, and you have those screaming genes, you inherited them, you have a bad temper from birth, and it's still acting out right now, your task is to be working on that. In adulthood, that is your task, to be working at getting better and better and better. So you can succeed or fail at your task, but it's not that your child is succeeding, or it's not that your child's behavior makes you succeed or fail. I hope I'm making that distinction clear here, right? So if your child is angry, that's not your failure. If you're angry, that's your failure, okay? So if you want to take ownership of something, take ownership of what you do have control with. Because even if you find yourself very, very angry, for example, which is something that parents do blame themselves for, there are so many steps that you could be taking to address your own anger. You don't have to just sit there and be angry, right? Talk to your doctor, your mental health professional, take an anger management course, read the book I wrote called Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. Like, there's a million things you can do. Not just my book, but all the books out there and all the parenting classes and all the different things can help you to develop techniques so that you won't just yell. So, if you know, those are things that are in your control. So I hope that helps clarify things now, and just do the best that you can do.